This week on the program, you know, I just learned that the original title of this movie was Crispy Critters, the Motion Picture. It's Firestarter. I'm Andrew Crispy.
Steven Sadek.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. Thank you for tuning in, as always. This is We Hate Movies, a comedy program where we talk about movies in a fun and gross way. This week, we're talking Firestarter from 1984, directed by Mark L. Lester, who, man, I don't know what the fuck happened, but somehow this dude, after making this movie, managed to indeed direct Commando.
Your ass used to be beautiful. Like, what the fuck? Day. Commando. No.
Yeah.
But this was Commando was after this. This was
really,
he had an interesting run. It's this in 84 and then Commando in 85. And then in 86, he directed Armed and Dangerous. What the fuck filmography?
It's a crazy filmography, man. Armed and Dangerous. Stay tuned and a half. I remember watching that movie 1,000 times. Unlike this movie, this was my first time.
I've seen it.
Yeah, no, I'd never seen this.
I've seen it a couple times.
I had seen it. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's got its moments. Certainly the ending rules, but it's sort of, it's just a great cast, a banger score, and TV movie directing. And it's just like, it just feels like a movie of the week.
I think it's very obvious. I mean, we were talking about right before we started recording, but John Carpenter was supposed to direct this. It was supposed to be his follow-up to The Thing, but because everyone was insane at the time and thought The Thing was the worst movie ever made.
I don't know what was in the water that year, man. Like, what the fuck was society thinking?
No idea what could possibly be up people's fucking ass with that shit. But, like, that you can so clearly tell he had, like, given them kind of a construct of what it should have looked like, and they just fucking dropped the ball completely.
Big time. Yeah. Absolute big time. This is also, how about this, written by a dude named Stanley Mann, who this guy wrote two interesting things. Damien Omen 2 and Conan the Destroyer of all pictures.
Wow. Oh, boy.
The weird thing, and the problem with this movie, I think, one of the biggest problems, is that it's not, it seems to be too faithful of an adaptation just in terms of like, how, like, I read the Wikipedia somewhere, like, oh, that's exactly how the movie moves.
Oh, really? Not many divergences from the text, huh?
But because apparently Carpenter's version had, like, was 300 pages and had, like, a lot of different stuff in it.
Yes.
And I think whatever that different stuff made it a movie, and this is just sort of like the book come to life.
Right? Yeah,
which I think is a problem with King in general. Like, a lot of his movies don't get that cinematic, and I think that's why.
Well, that's, I think,
not counting The Shining, obviously.
Well, no, that's you inspired this thought in me, though. That's what's interesting, to look at like King adaptations. Clearly, in most cases, the further you get from the source material, the better the movie is, because The Shining Kubrick movie is not the book really at all. Well, and it's a masterpiece.
Well, but we also know the masterpiece, The Green Mile. it's terrible. You just let the director do what the fuck they want. I don't care. I sent you guys that HBO behind the scenes clip.
Yeah.
At the end, King is like, "Well, yeah, you know, it's the most movieable of my books, I think."
And I'm like,
"You're just making up." Great, thank you, Steven.
My man loved to make up words, by the way. We got a couple of bangers in here. We've got Grand-ther, which we say, and it's like, oh, Stephen King, you wrote that, didn't you?
What's that supposed to mean?
Grandfather. So instead of grandfather, you call him Grand-ther.
Oh, is that some like fucking, you know, old timer thing, maybe?
I don't know. I just, it sounds like,
because he likes
Stephen
that
King.
Shit too. He likes people talking like old timers.
Which
for no reason.
I do like. I like Art Carney in this movie. Is kind of a delight when he's,
man,
just
Art,
like,
Carney getting shot. Yes.
Yeah. And then he's like saying shit like, "Oh, that's a corker."
We should bring back that. Corker, you guys. That's a pretty good one.
Main
like
language
to say
in
like
general.
That's cool. Like, wow, what a corker.
Well, you know, or corking rack, madam.
I don't know about corking what a corking rack she had.
Corking ass on that dude walking by. Yeah.
Does David Keith ever say Mingo in this?
He does not.
That's too bad.
I think David Keith, it's kind of funny because this movie is being remade right now, and that's why we're doing it. It's going out this weekend or some bullshit. And David Keith, I mean, he's not an exact for Zac Efron, but it's pretty close of like 12 people passed. It's really like lot of people passed that it got down to you.
Zac Efron, way more handsome than David
Keith.
Oh, sure.
Well, this haircut's doing nobody favors.
God. What, this thing's like a lion's mane. Can you believe it, this haircut?
I mean, I'll be honest. It was working for me. I kind of like how the man's looking in this. He's
a little good looking man. Something to grab, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He played Jack Murdock in that Ben Affleck Daredevil movie. I mean, dude's been in 1,000 things, but
yeah. Whenever I see him, whenever I see his name in the credits, for a second, I'm like, Keith David. Oh my God, yes.
That's another thing.
He's kind of bizarro, Keith David.
I do feel like one time they're like, all right, we're gonna make a movie about the Black Panthers, and we need amazing actors. Get these, and then like, get us Keith David, and then David Keith shows up, and it's like, fuck.
Oh, you must be mistaken.
Oh no, the FBI agents are the next. Oh no.
Hi, I'm reading for Kwame Ture.
Well, if they want me to do blackface, I don't know. It's a major motion picture. Better do it.
Really weird. I guess so.
Well, they really want this guy in this Black Panthers movie. Huh?
They're willing to go to that length.
Oh, no. He thinks that. That's what he thinks.
He
walks into the audition room and then gets some shoe polish and then tries to fit in.
He just nailed the audition so hard. They were like, what are we going to do? And then some producer was like, I got it.
It's the plot of the movie Soul Man, but applied to the casting of a fictional Black Panther movie.
Yes.
So, you know, to start somewhere with this film, I want to quickly mention the powers here. So the movie's about a little girl who could start fires with her mind by looking
She's
at stuff.
She's a twisted fire starter.
That's right.
Pumpkin instigator.
Do you think they're going to use that song in the new one?
Oh, they
100%. One fuck. If you don't, that's a total fucking
failure. It'd be great if Zac Efron's like, I just can't remember. Kind of reminds me of a song I grew up with. And he puts it out. He dusts off a CD and puts it in the fucking...
It's a song I remember they played at my 4th birthday party.
No fucking way. What's going to happen is you are going to get some fucking Nora Jones-esque, I'm a fire.
Yeah.
You're totally
right.
Slow it down. Yeah.
It's going to be Little Ghost Girl cover. Absolutely.
That makes it prestige, you know?
Kevin, you totally call it, man. Now I definitely have to watch that movie.
Oh, by the way, you know it's going straight to Peacock as well, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw that advertised the other day when I went to try to watch this on Peacock because I was like, oh, I'm a Peacock subscriber. It says the movie's streaming there. Excellent. I go there. Not so fast, Andrew. Streaming for Peacock subscribers with commercials. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that sucks. I sat through those commercials.
Oof. I rented it on Apple, dude. I couldn't do it.
It's amazing these days how you can just tell like they have no confidence in the product, not just for that, but because like they say the word superhero 4 or 5 times within the span of 2 minutes in that trailer.
I mean, but also like you've got, it's not just Zac Efron in that film. You've got Gloria Rubin, who I love as the Martin Sheen role, but that's not on par.
Gamble. That's a gamble.
And you've got, I think Kurtwood Smith is sloshing around. I think, I don't know where he's going to fit in, but I like it. Maybe he's the Art Carney, possibly.
I think he's the doctor who.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think that's who he is.
Hmm. Oh, so that means he'll like try to have a little bit of turn of heart at the end of the movie, but she'll still set him on fire in a golf cart. Dude, that guy, one of the fucking funniest deaths in this movie. Sea of funny deaths.
Yes, that is.
But you're going to give the powers, Eric. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. Now, the powers, what I want to see, like, if we can be honest with ourselves, the audience, and the whole world here, I think if I had these powers, I think every other person I see is going up. I'm serious.
Oh, yeah. You'd be out of control.
Yeah. Oh, you'd have to be put down.
You walk down the street. Someone looks at you slightly cross, and they always kind of do.
Yeah, it's to me, it's like news from the front. Another A train goes up in a blaze. Just like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, Steve was commuting this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. I can just imagine the FBI coming to me like, can you talk to him? Like, no, he's going to set me on fire.
Well,
no, can't you talk him down from killing all those people? No. He's going to see me.
I'm
he's
not
going to
set you on fire, Chris. I would set on fire, though, almost anyone else.
It's a very nice day, Eric. Yes, it is. Oh, it's a very fine day. Now, here's the thing, though, dude. Remember the part in this movie where that fucking British doctor is like, she can do all this stuff now when she's a little girl. Imagine if she grows up, she could like cause a nuclear explosion. That would be you, dude. You would be nuking shit accidentally or intentionally.
Or
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Who gives a shit?
Your entire town has been nuked. That's Freddie Jones, by the way. Father of Little Rich Boy, which I didn't know until today, Toby Jones.
Oh,
no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the original.
A dynasty.
It's a dynasty. They're both good. They both have
fantastic actors.
Flabbergasted faces, which I love. So we start. It's on the. It's David Keith, not Keith David, on the run with Drew Barrymore.
And I think there's good urgency here. I feel like I was watching this and I was like, well, "This is better. This might be better than people have talked about this film." And you know, for the first 30 minutes, I was kind of enthralled because here I feel like you get some of that almost Commando-esque, you know, direction where it's the pacing, we're going, we're running, we're falling down highways, and the movie's moving.
Yeah, it is. I thought the first 50 minutes, I was like, this isn't bad. We're moving here. And, but I'll tell you, in this first part, you also see like exactly what the difference between what this is and what the Carpenter thing would have been. While he's running, somebody just like ADRs, he can control minds.
Yes.
And then in literally 2 minutes, you get a pretty good scene where you show the power. You actually show the $500 bill scene.
Yeah, the Jedi mind trick and in the
like,
cab.
Like, that's like Carpenter would have enough confidence to be just like, no, I'm going to show the power. I'm not going to just have somebody like, it's a superpower.
Yeah. Well, that's these guys from the quote unquote shop who are like, look exactly like CIA agents. Like, you guys, somebody's got to wear a t-shirt. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
put on some dungarees, possibly. Like,
if you're calling yourselves the shop, you got to be a little more out there than just your average CIA looking dude.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is sort of just the CIA or a division of it. There's a mention that it's the DSI, Division of Scientific Intelligence or Department of Scientific Intelligence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think sort of kills this, though, is like the structure that they choose to give it. Because like, I get it. Like, you want to start off like with a bang. So we start like the movie starts kind of after the movie actually started. You know what I mean? And then like he uses like the dad, the Andy character, having these flashbacks to sort of like catch you up on what went down, and it fucking kills it every time.
Well,
like,
you get a legitimate wavy flashback, and
dude,
that's like
totally
which we get, because he gets in the cab. Basically, they're on the run, they get in the cab, he tells the cab driver to take him to the airport, he gives him a dollar and says it's a $500 bill. He has to do this like camera head move to make his powers work.
Yeah, this is also oddly big time scanner cop, this movie feels like, in a big way.
Or Scanners, which came out the year after this. Or the same, is it the first? No, the Scanners came out the year before this, but the book came out in 1980. So there's that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Scanners is all over this thing. And also, I mean, we'll get to it when we get to it, but like Art Carney, I'm like, oh, it's Supergirl. she showed up on a farm and people took care of her.
Oh yeah, I guess that's
true. Oh wow, I never put that together. That is incredibly weird.
The flashback is you see they're at, I guess they're university students doing one of those, you know, medical trials.
Next door, Bill Murray's fucking giving some hot girl a card test.
I don't know, a couple of wavy lines.
Nothing flashy. Nothing that would grab the audience or anything. Just, you know, wavy lines.
You can keep the $5, mister.
I will. So like this guy's just like, well, it's going. This guy, Freddie Jones is great. He's just like, one or two of you might hallucinate just a little. No mental powers whatsoever. No.
I know in one of these top secret government experiments you think you're a part of where you're going to magically gain superpowers. Now, that's just malarkey, you see.
And this was a real thing, right? Like, they would actually, you know, the government would drug random people. Like, the MK Ultra shit, that's pretty much the Firestarter program.
Yeah, I kind of wish that they actually gave them these kind of powers so a few of these guys would have gone down. But it was just long trips. It was actually more like them, like, David Keith and Heather Locklear, like, lovingly looking at each other, being like, I love you.
Yeah, the whole stoned thing here is, it's fine. It goes on too long, though.
Way too long.
I don't know, man. Wouldn't it be cool to just be high with Heather Locklear, though?
Oh, for sure. 1984 Heather Locklear, absolutely.
Fucking 2022 Heather Locklear.
Talk about her role as Stacey Sheridan on TJ Hooker.
That's right. Was that so? Actually, Eric, 84, is Hooker on the air?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Nice. She's full Stacey mode right here.
This is her film debut, apparently.
Really?
Which was weird because I always thought that was whatever Swamp Thing movie she was in. Is she in the first Swamp Thing movie?
No, I believe she's in the second Swamp Thing.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I always thought that was her film debut.
I
was wrong.
I love David Keith's killer opener line here to Heather Locklear because she's like, when do we get paid? And then the kid goes to her and is like, yeah, I'm broke too. And it's like, wow, good one, dude.
Oh,
killer.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you can't afford dinner? Oh, just come here.
Isn't it romantic? We have nothing to our name.
And they start tripping out. I do love this werewolf looking guy who's like, is this run by the shop, man?
Oh, yeah, totally. They should have fucking that dude, they should have seen some scientists over in the corner like, yeah, we think that guy's onto us. Give him a hot shot.
maybe there's a few shots here where other test subjects rip their eyes out, which is
I think that's great. Doesn't great. That guy rip his eyes out? The guy who asks about is this the shop? Isn't that the same dude?
I think
I don't
so.
Remember potentially. I hope so. Because
the most
you know
hippy dippy one, yeah.
Yeah, don't, I think I think he,
yeah, his eyes he get ripped right dude, out. Yeah. Yes.
So maybe they did give him the fucking hot shot.
All right, Mr. Questions. Sure, enjoy having no eyes.
Exactly.
Give him Serum X.
And yeah, they start tripping out, and you know, they can start reading each other's minds. Him and Heather Locklear, because she's like, "Wow, what a great compliment." And he's like, "I didn't say anything." I'll tell you, man, if Heather Locklear could read my mind, I'd be in real trouble. I'd be in jail in 5 minutes.
Yeah, totally. It would be a real get him out of here.
What did you say to me? Nothing.
With a cake? Ew.
That could mean so many things. I do like the flirting here or whatever, but it is immediately interrupted by this, tons of people freaking out. This needs to be a back to formula with whatever drug they're trying to come up with here, man.
Can we get one that makes ice people, maybe? That'd be better.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's a little less dangerous.
So you're trying to make my X-Men icy.
Is the thought here, now both of them get experimented on, they get these powers, they have a kid.
Yes.
Is that kid just naturally gifted, or is that kid also getting dosed as a child?
No, I think that's the idea, is they have now made a little Firestarter kid.
Right.
The movie never does nail that down, and I feel like, I don't know, you're doing all these fun flashbacks. Why don't you get a scene in there where, because this is what you don't have. You don't have a scene of the two of them discovering that Drew Barrymore also has powers.
Yeah, no. They should have. It feels like the movie should have been front loaded with a little more information. Even the shop stuff, if you could somehow move that to the top and then have them on the run as the bulk and towards the end of the film.
You can just throw all that shop shit in the fucking garbage as far as I'm concerned. Until the fucking climax, honestly, shut fucking right in the fucking garbage.
Well, because this made me think of another Stephen King story. Adapted into a way better movie, Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep.
Yes.
In that movie, you do have the scenes where the parents of the girl, Abra, I think her name is, the parents discovering that what's going on with our daughter? There's fucking spoons on the ceiling. And you get those scenes of the powers sort of coming to life as the kid gets older, and you need that shit for a movie like this.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. They skip over with all these flashbacks. They actually skip over the most interesting part of it, is because you let these people go?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, what the fuck was that?
You
didn't kill them?
And like, at the very least, I if I had any idea they were getting close to that kind of power, I'd be like, snip the balls off. Like, honestly.
Just,
like,
yep.
No way these can procreate. Absolutely not.
One more little test here. You just dose them, and then that's it. You're fucking vasectomy town.
Goodbye. Totally. Goodbye. Goodbye. Bye.
You just see them living in like kind of domestic tranquility, and like they're getting nasty phone calls from the shop, I guess, who are just like, come back. Hey, come back.
Don't make us drive down there and pick you up. You better come to us.
All right. We have the door open until 2 p.m. Better be here.
Yeah, these threatening phone calls, kind of like Keith Gray on Melrose Place calling Alice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you freaks with your powers, you stupid whore.
No, there's another call from the shop, hon.
Why do they keep calling me a whore? I don't know.
Now they're talking about whore powers. I don't know.
We do see Charlie because it's kind of weird that it's a little bit of a fake out because like in the whatever airport, she kind of lets it loose like, oh, my God, I hurt mommy. So you're like, oh, she killed her mother. That's kind of cool.
Right.
Yeah, but they don't go there. In the flashback, you see her. She lights her oven mitts on fire. You know, that's fun.
They're doing like these tests, which is another thing. It's like you're encouraging your kid, this young child, to start fires with their mind with a piece of toast. And then we're all upset when the oven mitts catch on fire.
But that's why you need like more of a setup for this, because it's like, what is the discussion about? Oh, well, honey, if we train her, you know, she can control them. And because that's obviously what he's trying to do here. But like, you don't have any of that fucking setup. It's just like, you know, it looks like an episode of a fucking like 80s sitcom. It's just a family in a kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's like toasting a piece of bread with her mind is the idea.
Well, that the laugh track would be great when the oven mitts go up.
Totally. Know? And like he's running
Charlie.
To the sink. The bread's on fire and he has to like run to the sink and put it out. And the audience is just going crazy.
And then they find the mother in the closet. You're like, well, this is an odd turn for small wonder.
You get the audience gasp.
It would add
a small
lot.
Wonder. There was a robot.
There was a little robot girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a robot girl, huh?
Some inventor pervert invents a little robot girl that's like their maid, but also their daughter. Yep. And it's like, nothing to see here, folks. It's just like, I made a tiny 12-year-old robot girl and nothing. Totally fine.
We don't have to do that these days anymore. They can just get an anime body pillow to lay with.
Oh man,
cheaper for sure.
In the airport, it's an interesting little scene here. She spies this like scumbag guy, this like girlfriend or just hookup or whatever is like clearly pregnant, and she's like, you know, hey man, you got to help me out here, you know. And he's like, oh, you probably slept with all sorts of guys and like being a real piece of shit. And Charlie, Drew Barrymore, like sets this dude's shoes on fire. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, not bad.
This is another moment where you're just kind of like, what exactly does this movie want to do? Because it's like, it's kind of interesting here because they have to keep moving. Like they just want to like they have to do that thing with the quarters in the phone.
Yeah.
To get money.
Oh, they make the phone spits out quarters so they can afford a hotel room.
He should have done was do the the $1 bill is actually $500 or $100 and do that with a cashier. I handed you $100.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's real money that you don't have to do mind money with, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing too, is you have to get quarters and shit. And I mean, like, I don't know. Now you're paid for how much are you going to get out of a telephone? Like $40, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'll tell you this right now, man. A dude that looks like David Keith right here goes to a fucking seedy motel with a little girl and pays for a room in quarters. That guy at the hotel is immediately calling the police.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You got to shell out for the Hyatt at least, I think, at that point. This should be a really tense and like awe-inspiring scene when like the little military brat gets his shoes set on fire. Uh-huh. Yeah. And like, because it's the first time we're seeing her really let her like stuff go, like and do something. Yeah. But rather than actually like let you sit in the awe of it, he like goes into the toilet and fucking puts his feet in, turns directly to the camera like, can you believe it, folks?
Well, it is a bad fucking reaction.
Yeah.
It's like a joke line at the end because like this guy, the police guy is like, hey, freeze. He's like,
mind if I put out my feet first?
Totally. And the studio audience goes crazy.
And it's still like the better part of this movie. And the whole movie should have been them going cross country on a road trip or whatever. Yep. Because at the end, we're trying to get to the New York Times to blow the lid on everything. And it feels like kind of an afterthought.
Oh, yeah. The whole, we're going to take these dudes down by telling the media.
Also, how laughable is that today, right? That wouldn't work now.
Oh, no, dude. I'm sure fucking Ross Douthat would have some fucking opinion column about how the shop is the fucking greatest treasure to American society or something.
And John Rainbird simply needed women, young women, and that's okay.
You know, men don't have purpose anymore. They don't have a place to go. So we have to bring back a bigger shop. A more extensive shop so that men can feel manly again.
All John Rainbird as a man wants to do is take this little girl's powers with him into the afterlife. Is that so bad?
Yeah.
Is that so bad?
Clickety-clack, native mysticism.
Uh-huh. Oh, we will get to that.
We're mentioning George C. Scott plays, I guess, a Native American character in this.
John Rainbird.
Yes.
It is truly something. They're giving him, like, a ponytail. I mean, and that appears to be about it. But
and I think they're dark. I think he's a little tanner than normal.
Do you think so?
I think a touch.
Yikes!
Might be the California sun, but yeah, I think there's something to it.
And I mean, he's got like this one bad eye, which I find out which is kind of funny. Like later in the movie, he puts on an eye patch.
Oh right.
It's because he got infected from the shitty contact they gave him.
that right there, Steve, that story tells you fucking everything you need to know about this production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it was just that. By the way, Dino De Laurentiis, so you know there was money problems. It was just like a scuzzy, gross North Carolina production, and George C. Scott got a fucking eye infection.
But yeah,
like, there you go. That's the movie.
And then Dino De Laurentiis, once he lands in the United States, tells the cashier, no, I actually gave you 100. Gonna try to fucking get this movie made.
Dino, I have these fucking contacts burning my eyes!
Don't worry, I'll just use some mind money.
No, I gave you
give me the real fucking dollars, Dino! I'm playing a what? Get that shit off of me.
Which is so fucking funny because like, it does not matter that this character is Native American, man. So like, just call him John Davidson. And you know, if you really need him to have the ponytail, fine. Because I'll tell you what, George C. Scott does kind of look badass with a ponytail.
Yes.
But he doesn't need to be Native American. What the fuck were you thinking?
You could even keep the threads and make him a Nugent-pilled motherfucker. Like,
exactly.
Whatever you like.
Just make him a dude upset. Like, a very clearly, like, make it a real clear thing. He's a white guy that is obsessed with Native mysticism, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. The Ted Nugent angle makes perfect sense because both this character and Ted Nugent are child molesters.
Yeah. Bingo bango.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this character, I don't know. I mean, Ebert had that reading. We watched the Siskel and Ebert at the movies prior to recording this. And Ebert does mention that this character seems to be a child molester. And that seems where it was going when we get there, folks, when he's like, I need the kid. You got to give me the kid afterwards.
Yes.
For disposal. She needs to be disposed of.
Right.
He also definitely says, because the move that he has in this movie is this fucking fatal karate chop to your nose and knocking the cartilage into your brain move.
It rules.
We loved it at the time. We loved doing this shit.
But he fucking tells Martin Sheen that he wants to do that to this girl. Like, this is a completely different. It's a character from a completely different movie.
Yes. Right. He's gonna smash her nose in with his hand and put it in so pieces of bone go into her brain and cartilage, and then he can maybe, just maybe, absorb her fire powers for the afterlife.
What is he planning for the afterlife? He's gonna be some big flame warrior.
He's gonna get to the afterlife, and everyone's like, "Oh, hey, John Rainbird!" Like, it's gonna be like a hey, what do you call it there? Like a high school reunion. Like, oh, so what have you been up to? I don't know, maybe firepowers.
Right, I've eaten about 50 souls so far.
John, you can stop trying to flame at us. We're dead as well, okay?
Just, we're
you
all know, ghosts here.
Doesn't really
work.
Yeah, but
I'm going to go to firepowers.
Yeah, well, that's a nice party trick. Maybe when the ball drops at midnight, we'll get that out.
Oh man. So they're you know, on the run or whatever. There's a weird, like, he almost gets hit by a truck because he falls down a hill, like, onto the side of a highway.
Clickety-clack. What's scarier than a truck?
Clickety-clack.
Trucks are scary, right? What was the Pet Cemetery has a killer truck as well. Oh, yeah. Obviously, Maximum Overdrive. Yeah,
yeah. What does he find scarier, trucks or clowns, you think?
Ooh, trucks. Or a truck with a little clown face on it.
Oh, right. Or a clown driving a truck.
At the time, sobriety, I believe.
But this truck
running out of coke
is not going to stop. It might as well be a Maximum Overdrive vehicle. I just love the notion of truck drivers saying, this Coors got to get there.
Can't make it. Yep, the brake would just hurt everybody.
It's just like you're seeing not just even a guy, but a guy and a little girl in your fucking crosshairs like, nope, I got to get there. Got to be there on Tuesday.
Hey, I'm honking.
Well, officer, I honked an awful lot before I mowed them down.
So. Oh, well, that's totally understandable then.
Dragged their body through three states.
Also, in the flashback with the toast, it does kind of continue while they're at this. He's sort of like trying to get some rest at this hotel that they get into. And part of the other part of the flashback is him coming home. And he finds Heather Locklear like dead in a closet. The house has been, you know, gone through or whatever.
Quick question. What is it? Is her underwear in her mouth? What is going on there? Like,
yeah,
he pulls something out of her mouth and I was really confused as to what it was.
I completely forgot about that until you said it just now because they never go back to it in any way. Yeah, I think it might be.
Which is just, it's an odd turn for Firestarter. Like, what? Why is the shop wants to get these people because they have superpowers and wants to control them. I have an idea. Let's kill and possibly even sexually assault his wife. That'll get him on our good graces.
Yep, exactly. And this is like the shop dude. You see him. He like chloroforms Drew Barrymore right here. Yes. And then like Andy comes out into the driveway and there's a little bit of a face off and he just tells these dudes, you're blind.
Love that. Yeah.
And these fucking agents just start like screaming and like falling on the ground and they can't see or whatever.
Fuck that. Stop their heart. Just that's bullshit.
Or make blindness. Them, you know, you got these mind powers. You could do anything. You'd have a lot of fun with it. Take it for a walk. Like you guys bite each other's testicles off, you know?
And or just like you're impotent for the rest of your life.
Right.
Just like it's all never going to work for you.
Never. Like, I'm always thinking slightly in the back of my mind that guy from the shop, your dick don't work. So therefore it'll never get up.
Baby. It's that guy with the fucking mind powers again.
I'm trying. we do have a scene where Toby Jones' dad is telling Martin Sheen and George C. Scott like the statistics from the experiment. And apparently 8 out of the 10 subjects have either died or committed suicide at this point. Yeah, real back to formula shit here, folks.
Well, he comes in and because basically you meet Martin Sheen again a little too late in the movie, I think. You meet Martin Sheen and John Rainbird, George C. Scott, like. Georgie Scott has wrapped up some other black ops thing. It's like, what happened in Venice? It's like, we're okay. You know?
Oh, they, right. Yeah. I forgot about that too.
And
is it sinking?
And this doctor does what you should never do when you're in black ops is go in and threaten your superior. You know, you just don't do it, folks. If you're going to go above his head, just go above his head. You know what I mean? Don't threaten that you're going to because you're going to get fucking murdered.
Yep.
Yep.
And you just can imagine these people being like, ha, fuck. Okay. We need an evil government type. Fuck. What did the last guy do? Martin Sheen? Okay, let's do Martin Sheen. Yeah, let's get back. Let's just not think of anything fucking original at all. Let's just like, fucking do it again.
What did the last guy do? It's great.
Well, it's kind of just like, all right, we want like a Martin Sheen in the dead zone type. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, why don't we just call him? Go to call him?
You know what? If the worst that could happen is he says no.
Look, you're not a senator technically in this movie. What you are is a... what is it? Managerial type. Yeah.
Well, he's actually, it's some sort of military. His name in the movie is Captain Hollister.
Yes. I guess I just didn't like everybody else who was military is very like coded as military. He read as such like a like bureaucrat to me.
Yeah. Well, that's what's weird. You never see him in any kind of like uniform or anything. He's just wearing a suit and tie the whole time.
And he's not like fighting.
Bicycling around the shop. And yeah, it feels very, yeah, it feels very like he's someone from Yale or Harvard or something overseeing the study. But yeah, apparently he's military. And I guess this is maybe the Department of Defense is involved.
This whole thing of like this secret agency that's like in a house like it is reminded me. I can't think of the name of the movie now, but it's another like psychic kid movie. Cassavetes has that amazing death in it. The Fury, yes. Great this movie. Movie also was giving me real The Fury vibes.
Much better movie. By
100%. Yeah.
But I love C. Scott here because we're going to do the bad hardcore impression the entire time, but he's really restrained this entire movie.
Oh, this is like his performance in The Changeling for the most part. Just very low key.
And he's just like, oh, look, because the guy, the scientist like storms off, like, I'll tell everybody. And then he goes, excitable man. Like, and he's going to get him killed. It fucking rules.
It's actually kind of, that is a great moment because he says that. And then he looks at Martin Sheen and Martin Sheen, like, you just see a shot of him making eye contact back with Scott. And it's like, yep, he's going to fucking kill that guy. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And boy, does he.
He goes to his house. I think he has a reed from a tree and is like fucking with his nose a little bit while he's sleeping.
Oh,
and
tickle, 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 tickle. Oochie goochie goochie go. I got your nose and I want to smash it.
I really want to try this with children. It seems like that's kind of what I should be doing with these lines.
This is more of practice for the children, really.
He like shaves him fully in his sleep, tries to make him look younger.
Oh God! Could you put on a nightie of some sort here?
Oh yeah.
So they're like walking down the road, doing some hitchhiking here. Andy and Charlie is, and we meet Art Carney comes into the movie as Irv Manders driving this truck. Offers to give them a ride because they're going to Knoxville, but then he's like, oh, do you want to come over to my house for lunch or something?
Well, because they're doing like a bad, like, oh, my mom just gave birth. We have to get to Knoxville immediately.
Right. Yes. And they said like, oh, yeah, she's got a baby brother named Andy that just got born. What do you think of the name Andy? It's a corker.
Now, let's get you back to my house. And Ma Kent, I mean, my wife could help you, clean you up a little bit.
You see, my wife's corking wreck.
Yeah, I didn't mean Ma Kent. I meant Norma.
And this is the thing we did in the 80s. I think we do it less now, which is a very good thing. It's just telling little girls how pretty they are. Oh, the prettiest little girl I've ever seen. Oh, what a pretty little girl you got
it's
there.
So fucking gross.
But then, man, I mean, I think one in, every other person was like Freddy Krueger.
They kind of were. It was always like, oh, I wish I could take you home and marry you, pretty little girl.
Wear your face or whatever. It's a corner.
And I would support anybody who would legislate for me to be able to marry you, little child.
We should have a commitment ceremony when you come over to my house for lunch today. What a corking idea.
I could technically be your quote-unquote husband until you find your real husband.
God. But yeah, no, he is kind of like a libertarian nutcase the way he confronts the government
big time.
In this, which,
I love
which
this
is kind of cool.
He takes her home to his, I mean, speaking of child bride, Louise Fletcher. I mean, Art Carney and Louise Fletcher, who put these two together? He's 70 years older than her.
It took me a while. I was like, oh, that's his caretaker.
He's paying that woman. I mean, I guess because like Louise Fletcher's like just over 50 and Art Carney's 90 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
same diff, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty age inappropriate. Maybe it's a second wife situation.
Oh, nice. I like that. This
like his first wife dropped dead taking care of those chickens.
Get a nice young one.
Sure, I married her younger sister.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it works. You move down the rank.
It's some bad naming here, though, because the family name here is Manders, and her name is Norma, so you got to say Norma Manders.
Yeah, it's bad.
Clickety-clack.
We're
Just keep moving. We got another book due.
Yeah, totally. At lunch or whatever, Charlie sort of accidentally says something to the effect of, oh, my mom used to always say that. And then it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, she says that now because she's still alive.
And now, Art Carney, like, gets hip immediately, but so does Louise Fletcher, who, by the way, is fucking furious that he brought these people
home. Of course, oh, you fucking bringing a drifter into my house, dude. Now I gotta make them lunch.
Yeah, and she's doing all these disgusting table burps.
How do you know that that's his daughter? Huh?
Well, that's father. That's the best part. So he goes out, and then, like, Art Carney's like, hey, you want a beer? Andy, that's your real name, isn't it? He's like, yeah, it is. And he's like, did you snatch that girl? Like, could you just ask? And he tells him this whole crazy story, but, like, I don't know. If you think someone kidnapped someone, don't ask them. Call the police.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. You get him that beer. Uh-huh. You don't let him know, you know, that you're hip to what's going on. And then it's like, oh, hey, I got to go take a leak. I'll be right back.
Exactly.
And I know he doesn't talk like that. I'm doing his honeymooner's voice, but whatever.
But this is
and then you slink off and you call the authorities.
I feel like you didn't even need those flashbacks. If we're just telling Art Carney the plot of the movie here. Yes. We're stopping. Right. We're pulling over again to explain what's happening.
Yeah, Eric, don't worry. It's just to make sure all you stupid idiots in the audience, do you remember what happened 25 minutes ago?
If this was just like, it seemed like this drifter family and he's just telling this story, yes. We don't get these flashbacks, it might be like, Who do you believe? It might be a little more compelling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. As opposed to seeing the exactly.
God, it's so fucking dumb.
But sure enough, the shop is on their way. And Charlie also has premonition powers that don't come into play much, but
boy, it is convenient when that power goes in and out because she senses like the shop coming from way down the road. She's like, oh, they're coming, they're gonna be here soon, blah, blah, blah. And she's correct, yet she cannot sense later in the movie when she's walking out of their little cabin, lake house, safe house thing, and George C. Scott is 20 feet away in a tree and assassinating
him. Did George C. Scott like push the brains in of someone that had like, they got the cloaking powers. They, you know.
He's absorbing. He's like Mega Man. Like once he defeats somebody, he absorbs their power.
I got it. Now after this guy, I'm going to take on Woodman, Windman, and the rest of them.
Fuck you, Catman!
Dr. Wily, definitely at the shop.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, totally, totally.
George C. Scott would have made a great Dr. Wily, sadly.
Oh, yeah.
Go get him, Top Man!
Top man is great for a lot of reasons.
Fireman, flame man, cinder man. How many fires do we got? We gotta get a lot more in here.
Wait, so Top Man he's just a top? That's all he does? Well, that's not very good. I mean, that's fantastic for him, but why? Why?
Does it hurt them? is it just for fun?
I'm gonna kill him and be a top in the afterlife.
I thought he was gonna spin around like a top. No, he just tops people. Okay. All right. Wow! Nice.
Made like 13 of those games. Yeah, I guess you're gonna run out of ideas. Top man. Yeah, you know, he fucks him.
All right. He's never a bottom. Okay. All right.
All right. So back to Cut Man, Blade Man, Knife Man, Machete Man, Scissor Man.
Yeah. What? Oh fuck! Verse Man. What the fuck's a verse? Oh man, he goes both ways. God damn it!
I'm gonna invent a power bottom man.
Let me get it straight.
He just fucks him.
What kind of thing is that for a children's game?
See, this is what I want him being pitched to do this movie and him reacting to these ideas.
I mean, everything else makes sense. They're exciting, fire, cutting, running around, fucking. He's got a dog. He helps him jump. It's adorable. This other thing, he just fucks people.
What? You ride the dog? Literally or the other way?
The dog turns into a boat. This other thing just fucks people.
It just fucks people.
He's Top Man, dude.
I love
top
it. Man.
Exit only with Top Man, dude. Don't worry about it.
I really want to play Mega Man after we're done recording. Of
course. Oh, why? You want to be fucking frustrated?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're pretty difficult.
Well, I'll tell you what, because I've been playing the newest, whatever, Smash Brothers. I've been getting back into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun as fuck to play as Mega Man, but then I was like, I wonder what, like, how far Mega Man games have come. Like, has there been like a newish Mega Man game?
There was, I think there was one for Switch specifically. Huh. I think it was Mega Man X or something like that. I forget.
Top Man in it? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's around.
Fox people? Are you just Fox people in this game?
Yeah, it's rated X, the game.
Top Man.
The first Mega Man to be rated X.
Top Man's catchphrase is, "I didn't take it out for air." Dude, just, you know, it's what he's always looking for. He's looking for it.
But yeah, so big standoff here.
Yeah, this is your first of two pretty great standoffs. The second one much better than this. But basically, Dad is just like, "Listen, I know that I keep telling you not to burn people, but this time around, you know what? These people are asking for it.
These people right here, they killed your mother. Go get them."
Yeah, I'm fine with this. Yeah, yeah, fuck them.
I mean, that's it is what's going on here. He's like sicking her on them, which is fucking great.
You know,
like,
you got to
open
it
up. Totally. You definitely have to do it.
I mean, that's the thing is earlier when she's like, "No stealing." I'm like, if I'm David Keith, I'm like, "I'm going to have you burn at least 20 people to death."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The quarters are the least of your problems right
We're
now.
Stealing. We're
got
stealing.
A kid and she's loaded.
Yeah, we're stealing souls later. We're just stealing quarters right now.
And Arc Hardy didn't believe the story that David Keith gave him, and then he starts seeing this as, like, holy shit, you know, kind of
thing. Oh, my God.
He also sees because she starts, like, freaking out in the kitchen.
Right.
Cool effect here. Yes. You get the butter melting on the table.
Yes, and I love Arc Hardy going outside with a gun, his deer hunting rifle, to try to get rid of these fucking government men. They're trespassing.
Oh, dude. Yeah. He's doing a lot of get off my property.
Yeah. And the whole thing is like, you know, get off, you're trespassing, get off my land unless you have a warrant. We don't need a warrant. You do, unless I woke up in Russia this morning.
Of course.
Yep. Oh, yep.
And Louise Fletcher is just like, "So you brought these freaks to our house. The government's trying to get them out. And now you're willing to lay down your life for these dangerous loner freaks."
Yep.
Got it. Got it. Okay, cool.
If it means I can turn a gun against my own country. Absolutely.
He didn't laugh at me when I said Reagan is God. He didn't. He just spit in my face. Oh, I like him.
You know, honey, it wasn't more than 45 minutes ago. I was just planning to make bologna sandwiches for two. And now there is an armed standoff on my front lawn. Thanks so much for bringing these drifters home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't just help the secret police. Okay, Norma.
I'm not going to be a good Nazi, which is
I mean, it is incredible how fast this dude turns in favor of helping them with like almost no evidence.
He's our son, Norma. What? What are you talking about?
Oh, that'd be great. He's just totally delusional too, on top of it all.
He's got dementia. Yeah.
Our son was killed in Vietnam, Arthur.
Oh, he's hold back. On.
I heard this man's got dementia. That seems like potentially a superpower I might need in the afterlife. Let me crush his head in.
He's going to karate chop this old man's nose.
Yeah, that was the most offensive Mega Man character.
Dementia Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just always like walking around confused. Mega Man like couldn't even fight him.
Yeah, he shuffles around the apartment. If you get him outside, suddenly you're lost. Sorry.
it's bad.
It's sad. It's really sad because then he's always like, "Are we together?" Mega Man's like, "No, we're mortal enemies. You remember that, right?
Oh, come on. We hate each other. No. I killed your best friend, Top Man."
Yeah, this is how you turn Mega Man into Death Stranding. Just like walking with Dementia Man through the fucking afterworld, being like, no, we're mortal enemies. We hate each other, and I want to take your power. I don't know why.
You make that into some like story, you know, very story heavy kind of video game.
Yeah.
That could be a nice little offshoot.
Yeah.
Mega Man and Dementia Man.
Literally nobody would play it, but it would be funny to come out. It would really make me laugh.
Oh, so whatever, you know, she kicks into high gear here, and it is fucking fabulous watching all these agents get cooked up and blown up.
You know what it kind of reminded me of? Actually, this must be a kind of a reference in one of the best movies ever made, X-Men 2, X-Men United. when they get at the Drake's house, they get pulled over, and Pyro starts burning up all these agents, kind of very similar.
Like,
porch, the whole thing. It's a very, very, very similar.
Wow, I really don't even remember that scene in X2, and it's been so long. But this, it's good. I love seeing dudes in engulfed in flames, stunt performers, obviously just running around. It's great.
It's kind of incredible on the because I think all the pyro stuff in this movie is pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Yep.
On the episode of At the Movies, boy, Gene Siskel, unimpressed with the fucking effects, and he's like, you see a guy engulfed in flames, and boy, you could see the flame mask he had over his head preventing him from certain death. And it's like, okay, come on, Siskel, why don't we suspend disbelief a little bit here, man? It's still a person on fire.
You know, back in the golden days, Luis Buñuel would just set a man on fire and would film it. And he would think that, you know, that's filmmaking. That's cinema.
I paid $6 and I want to watch a man burn to death. And Raj, they didn't let me do it. Raj.
Remember when the movies used to have a body count, an actual body count.
And it does, I mean, it does all the practical stuff rules. It's really fun to look at.
I think he's, I mean, Mark L. Ester is a man who is into stunts. Like Commando is a big stunt movie. He made a movie literally called Stunts with Robert Forster.
Which I saw, which is not that good, but.
No, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, that sucks. With a name like that, you hope it's at least exciting.
And that's the HBO behind the scenes thing is all about the stunts. And I, honestly, the 6 minutes of that thing just going through the stunt work, and I was like, this is better than the entire movie, essentially.
Yeah,
I was
totally.
Like, really into this.
I do love, there's a couple of times this happens in this scene. Dudes running up to a car to try to open the door. And you see like dummies blow up. She's blowing these cars up. Man, it's fucking great. Grade A dummy work.
It happens a lot in this movie where it's like a guy is gonna do something, and then they cut and a dummy explodes. I will never be bored of that effect. It's great. It's fantastic. It's like a quick smash cut. Boom. Dummy explosion.
It's fucking great.
And then they leave. They get away, right? And they go to Chimney Rock.
That sucks.
They get away, by the way, because Art Carney is like, hey, take my van. And Louise Fletcher's like, motherfucker, what are we going to do?
It's incredible.
We don't even have bikes. How are we going to get off our own property? You're elderly and I'm in my mid-50s. What the fuck?
Just take our Jeep and ski daddle. Just feel free. Thanks for stopping by for lunch, crazy drifter that ruined our lives.
I guess I'll, and also like the weirdest part is at the end of the movie, these people are still alive. Cause if the shop is the shop and like Linrod, you see George C. Scott kill a mailman for no reason. Why on earth would these people not be black bagged and murdered? Like, They know too much.
Burn their house down.
Well, yes.
No. But they got to bring up Claire Kent.
I mean, it does make no sense, though, because, like, yeah, we see the two of them at the end of the movie. They take Drew Barrymore in and, you know, presumably adopt her, take care of her, whatever. But, like, the last we have seen the two of them, there's, like, 10 charred bodies on their front lawn, 4 exploded cars. Like, who's cleaning that up?
Thank you.
Is he feeding them to the pigs or something?
Shit. Definitely the chickens are pecking at him, dude.
But then hence again, like, the name, as hungry as a pig.
But like, Martin Sheen gets a report like, oh, so 20 of our men are murdered at this old farmhouse. And we let the farmer live, huh? Cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's also interesting. Now, after they go to the Grand Further. What was it called?
Grandther's
fucking old lake house here to hide out in. And it's like, man, the government can't even track down your next of kin's addresses. And they're not.
Yes.
I mean, they do eventually get there, but it just seems like a dumb place to go, even though it's a beautiful lake house.
It is wonderful.
Looks like a little Crystal Lake-esque here. We get the shot of the lake and the house on it and everything.
There's some poor fat mailman gets fucking got by DSI.
He did like a drop letter to the New York Times or something. And this is George C. Scott intercepting the mail?
Oh, is that what it is?
So. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I did not understand that at all.
There's one line that Andy has that's like, or Drew Barrymore says, like, well, we already sent the letter to the New York Times. And Andy says, like, what if it doesn't get there?
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's great because he goes to the mailbox and some old lady rats him out. It's like, he's here. He's delivering mail. And then George C. Scott's like, got it. Him and some other guy like have a car on the side of the road with a flat tire, and this kindly mailman stops by. What seems to be the trouble? And George C. Scott just chokes this dude out with a belt.
Man, it's incredible. Like this whole setup, like the belt choking, this disgusting leather jacket that he's wearing the whole movie. Get a look at this thing. It's fucking gross.
It's your classic long leather jacket, which always sounds better in concept.
Yep, totally. It is a real time to get a new jacket situation.
Here's the thing. Long leather jacket. Here's the test. Are you skinnier or as skinny as Keanu Reeves was in The Matrix?
Yep.
If the answer is no, then you cannot wear a long leather jacket.
You must be this Lorenzo Lamas to ride.
Abso-fucking-lutely, man.
If you got a bit of a gut, which I do, you're not wearing a long leather jacket. And that goes for you, Mr. C. Scott.
Before he embarks on the killing of the postal worker mission, there is a good scene where he totally, it's the whole thing about like George C. Scott agrees to go kidnap her for Martin Sheen as long as Martin Sheen gives her back to him for quote unquote disposal.
Yes, this is like the deal Drake has with Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh man.
And
talk to the Duffer brothers, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Now, when you're done with her, me, Drake, obviously, will take care of things.
What does Drake have to do with it?
Oh, he apparently hits on that girl or something.
A lot. They've been like texting since this first season.
Since she was a child.
What?
So Drake is just a pedophile. That's all. That's all. No big deal.
That's weird.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty open secret.
Huh. Gross. So George C. Scott also, though, great kind of threatening Martin Sheen, though, basically saying like, because Martin Sheen's like, what's to stop me from just having you killed or whatever? And he's like, oh, well, yeah, don't worry. I thought about that in the event of my death, yada, yada, all this stuff. He's basically like, if you fuck with me, like you will find out I will fuck you up from the afterlife.
Well, basically, you'll be in front of a judge within a year kind of a thing. Like,
which is pretty cool.
But yeah, it's a real when you're done with her, if you don't mind, like it's a, you know what I mean? Are you going to finish that kind of a thing?
Yep. Really gross and weird. Yep. Mm-hmm. Really gross and weird. Also weird, George C. Scott climbing this tree like a fucking grizzly bear, man.
I need
to get a good vantage point to assassinate them.
I am not hearing what I need to hear. I need to.
You're totally right, dude.
He gets up
this thing with silent ease. I don't think
no,
so.
Sir. No, sir.
Fucking goddamn robins on this branch. Move it. The branches are breaking. Branches are breaking.
There's the back. Oh boy. Oh no.
This long coat's caught. This long coat's caught.
Too fat for this jacket. I knew it.
Dino, I think that I am getting an eye infection, Dino. An eye infection from your rotten contact. My eye hit a pine cone, too.
I do believe a bird just shit on me.
He should struggle more up this tree.
He looks so stupid in this.
he really does.
I mean, I think, again, he's giving a good performance, but he looks so ridiculous. And then he just basically murks both these, both Andy and Charlie with trank darts, and it's pretty cool.
Oh, yes. Man.
And then the army of dudes in the woods in, fireproof suits come out. Couldn't sense them either.
It's fucking ridiculous that they like just allowed this to happen. Like, if you're going to have this happen, she can't sense them coming down the driveway at Carney's house.
Precisely. It doesn't work both ways.
Now, men, I cannot stress this enough. When you are approaching her, keep thinking, I'm a tree. I'm a leaf. I am dirt on the ground. Just you got to keep thinking it or she's going
to
know.
Right. Men, what you need to do first is you gotta use your chopping arm to break a branch, and then you get the power of the tree, and then you believe you're a tree.
And you must face Branch Man and Tree Man and Leaf Man.
There was a wood man, right?
There was a wood man. Yeah. He threw leaves at you and sticks.
That's awesome.
Shit.
Just leave a top man out of it. Honestly, he's a bit of a aloof asshole. Afterwards, he will not call you.
I mean, at this point, The Hague wants that guy. So I don't think we should be really dealing with him, even though we are a secret deadly force.
Why don't I want him? Because he fucks you and forgets you.
I got ghosted by Top Man.
I keep texting him, and I get nothing back. I get the three little dots, and then they go away.
Which means he was thinking of talking to me, but then decided not to.
or he knows I'm looking for the dots and he's fucking with me. Oh, you fuck me, top man.
So they get taken to the shop. Well, and like, this is where the movie totally stops when they get to this. It looks like Mama Gump's house, actually.
It does.
A little bit,
some fucking plantation house down there. Weird shit.
Because it's visually totally uninteresting. And it's like the movie gets caught. Like, not only do they get caught, the movie is now captured. You know what I mean?
The movie gets captured by Martin Sheen. And he refuses to let it out and continue.
Yeah, because he basically, like, Martin Sheen goes up to... We meet this doctor character with the greatest actor name I've ever seen.
Moses Gunn.
Ooh, beat that, totally. Dude.
Mm-hmm.
From The Killing Floor, a bunch of other movies. Mm-hmm. Fantastic
he's good.
Actor.
Yeah. And he basically is like, I'm your new friend, Andy. You know, you and I are going to be having sessions and I want to see what you can do, basically. Like what you can do with your mind powers, pal.
Martin Sheen, definitely not the guy to... Because he's trying to, like, buddy-buddy up to Drew Barrymore's character. And, like, clearly this guy's a scumbag, you know? And it's like, he's way too skeezy for her to fall for it.
Oh, but they'll fall for it, all right, with George C. Scott as the deranged janitor.
These close-up shots. This is where the child molesting stuff, I was like, okay. The shots of him gently touching her knee.
Yeah.
And like, I guess the thought is that, like, that's supposed to be like reassuring and you're showing how like him being sensitive with her is how he is being accepted by her. But it just creeps me the fuck out the whole time.
It's super, it's super creepy. But yeah, he's trying, or the movie's trying to tell us, even though the way he talked about her before sounds like she's a piece of meat. And now he's just trying to be like, oh, I'm your friendly uncle, and I vacuum the rug every single day.
I think even like towards the end of the movie, you're supposed to feel sorry for him a little bit. Like, I think you're supposed to kind of get to a point where like, oh, he did actually fall in love, or like have a grandfatherly love for this girl.
It's only tethered to humanity, I guess we see.
Yes, yeah.
The Kong, when he starts talking about Vietnam, that's when I was like, are they really trying to make him cool? Like a nice guy? I'm like, don't you do this. No.
Yeah, I was captured by the Kong, Donkey Kong.
He threw a barrel at me.
And then Diddy jumped on me. I made a mistake of letting Dementia Man lead me around. And before I knew it, we were in Donkey Kong country. It's terrible, Charlie. I think I'm... Every night I hear.
He made me ride a rhino with him.
I bet I was in a rail car getting bananas. It was terrible. Fall down a mining shaft looking for bananas.
Fighting alligator people after alligator people.
Some of them stand up on their hind legs. It's fucking gross.
No, yeah, because he does this thing. So he's like, Martin Sheen beefs it because he's just like, I'm like your dad. She's like, you're a fucking weirdo suit, gross. And you know, George C. Scott disguises himself as a janitor, and like he kind of strikes out the first time, but then he has this idea that like if he pretends to be afraid of the dark, they can bond over that kind of a thing.
It's really weird. So are they killing the power, fucking with it, or is it this storm naturally happening here?
I would think they killed the power because I think that they're all in on it, kind of.
Yeah,
a thing.
I think so.
And he's just like, "Oh, I was so scared in Donkey Kong country,"
because he keeps on saying the Kong instead of Viet Cong.
And, yes,
So he was captured in a John McCain fashion and put into a hole somewhere.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what
spiders, and they're throwing rotten rice at me.
Which is probably also
Top Man isn't even there.
It's probably also a lie. I feel like this guy's just full of
it. Yeah, probably. This guy wasn't in probably because he's fucking saying Kong. Like, wouldn't you say Charlie or at least the VC or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Something like that. Yeah. It eventually he like says Vietnam, but it's not like it is mostly the Kong. And then this is cutting in with scenes of them testing her. And Eric, did you notice what they call her power in one point?
What do they call that?
The Force.
Oh.
And she's like, the Force. We have to control the Force.
We also get pyrokinesis or something. I think.
Pyrokinesis. Yeah.
Pyrokinesis. Yeah.
Here's you know, I just watched a movie and I know I'm almost 40 years late, but Firestarter saying the Force, I'm going to sue.
Yeah, that came out like less than 300 days after Revenge of the Jedi, dude. I mean, Return of the Jedi, whatever. I had someone else make it. You know, you're in trouble, man.
You know,
you're
King,
getting sued.
You know, King, you think you're hot shit. You think you know, you think you can dance with the big boys? I've got lawyers. Lawyers from the Bermuda Triangle, motherfucker. They'll kill you.
They'll erase you, motherfucker. You'll be erased. Next thing you know, it's going to be The Shining, written by, you guessed it, George Lucas.
Yeah, they're going to be writing horror books about you, motherfucker, and what I do to you.
The scariest thing you ever did was fucking rip me off, asshole. I'm a nightmare. Ooh, I'm like a Cthulhu alien clown from outer space about to fuck your life up. You think a clown in a sewer is scary? Get ready for me in a courtroom, motherfucker. You're going down, you fucking weird cokehead.
Yeah, you're going to wish you met one of those interdimensional turtles when I'm done with you.
You've had your last orgy, weirdo. And no one's going to bury you in a pet cemetery because you ain't coming back, fuckface.
This sounds like perhaps the greatest episode of Celebrity Deathmatch. That claymation show from 30 years ago.
Absolutely, dude.
We would have done well.
Heavy inspiration on me.
It's but also quickly about the Viet Cong and George C. Scott. So it's like, yeah, they sent me off to Vietnam when I was 51 years old.
Yeah, like, just totally.
Like, this dude is in his late 60s. It's 1984. Like, you know.
Yeah, probably not. Mm-hmm. Some of these tests are cool. Like she sets this like a bowl of wood chips on fire. She does have a cool line. She goes, wood chips, they should have given me something harder. And she fucking like slams it against the window and makes this fucking bathtub light up. That's a funny Martin Sheen thing. He's like, did you see the tub? Did you see the tub? Well, look at the tub.
This is when he goes full Dead Zone crazy voice. You know what I mean? Because he's like, oh, hot damn, we did it. We did it. Yes, yes, yes. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, the weird line there is when he's like, oh, hot diggity dog. This is so great. We're going to do this, that, and the other thing, and it's going to hold up all the way to the Supreme Court. And I was like, what's going to hold
That's
up all the way?
Question.
What the fuck are you talking about?
The Super Soldier Act of 1986? What the fuck?
I don't know. And I mean, like, I want to get in here a little bit. I do think Drew Barrymore is kind of terrible. And I mean, like, it's a kid actor. You can tell, like, every scene, it's just, like, line. Like, they're just feeding her lines.
A couple of them, for sure. I think she does all right in some scenes and then not so much in others.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's just kid acting and kids. I've never seen a good kid before.
No, really? I think Haley Joel Osment's excellent in
I guess, but you have to look at it then, you know?
Well, yeah, that's true.
The kid in Come On, Come On is fantastic.
Yeah, Woody Norman, man, that kid rules.
Aren't all those kids older than Drew Barrymore here?
That's possible. She's very possible. Young.
It's possible. Yeah, I don't know. That's
a
good call.
I mean, look, I think that, you know, she's great in E.T. because she's just like a little seed stealer, you know what I mean? But here, like, we're asking an awful lot of this.
Because she's like the lead, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she fucking does another goddamn Stephen King movie a year later, a previous episode, Cat's Eye.
That's right.
And that's a better use because it's, you know, 20 minutes of the movie is her.
Yes.
Yeah, it's also, not the whole movie.
Also filmed down in North Carolina, just like this movie.
I mean, I do kind of like the idea where she's basically doing that. She does need the water because the fire has to go someplace. And I think even George C. Scott asks her, like, why is that? It's like, well, couldn't you just put it back inside? She's like, if I did, I'd burn up. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. You know, and this is also like she's starting to use these powers in these tests because George C. Scott and all these people have been saying, you can see your father if you just do it a little. And we also see her learning the power because now she says back off. She's like trying to turn it down.
Well,
yeah, totally.
She doesn't even really need the power at this point because this my favorite scene is this first scene when Martin Sheen's flipping out like, oh my God, we just super soldiers every which way. We're going to be so fucking, we're going to be the best. We're so fucking, they left the door open.
Yes,
dude.
They left the fucking door. Like this would be the biggest black eye for if this place existed.
It leads to the funniest George C. Scott line of the movie, though, because it's Martin Sheen tap dancing about we're going to take this to the Supreme Court or whatever. And George C. Scott is basically like, oh, you're satisfied with yourself, are you? Yes. Yeah, so in all your excitement, your assistant left the door open and the fire starter just walked out.
And all these fucking people in this broadcast news room filled with fucking cameras, none of them saw it.
And
because Martin Sheen was funny. Tap dancing.
And that's the weird thing, is it doesn't go anywhere, because I think even George C. Scott's like, who is going to be man enough to go get her? And nobody says anything, but then the next thing, she's just in her cage again, kind of a thing.
Yeah,
right.
But before that stuff, he puts his nails over a chalkboard real quick just to stamp it there for you.
And I'll catch your fire starter.
Meanwhile, David Keith is losing his power because they're drugging him up too much, kind of a thing. So like he beefs a couple of tests. He's trying to get a guy to put ink in a glass of water. The guy's like, no, I will not do that.
That's awesome. Fucking hilarious.
Like I said, it's just him in a room, like, all right, you're gonna do this. You can see your daughter if you just make this guy do this thing. It's like, no problem. And that's easy. And the guy's like, no.
It seems like they're trying to drive his power out of him basically by giving him all this medication.
Yeah.
Which he then starts not using so that he could. I mean, you should have saw this coming. I mean, there should be like an IV drip or something. You should force this medication into this man. Or just kill him. Just kill him.
Shoot him in the back of the head. It's over with.
Yes, this is what happens when you give them Wellbutrin. Yes, this is what happens is you lose your power. Hi, Elon Musk. Hi, you pedophiles. And you shouldn't like Wellbutrin. Fuck you.
Yeah, I have just bought the shop now. I buy the shop and Twitter.
What a useless fucking human being.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There's this security guard. There's one point, it's kind of useless, but it's... she's crying in her room because she misses her father, and he's crying in his room because he misses his daughter. And there's just one security guard watching both tapes, like, yep, everything's in order.
Yeah, like, I am working for a place that is on the up and up.
Everybody crying? All right. No, just write that in my little notebook.
So they Martin Sheen realizes, like, you know, they finally are like, we just got to kill this guy. And they make up this fucking fake story about, like, oh, yeah, Andy, we're going to take you to our fucking, like, dry out facility, our fucking chill out tent in Maui.
Sure.
We're gonna get you on a helicopter to this army base, and then you're gonna get to go to Maui and recover quietly while we definitely don't murder you.
But also, like, why? All right, so that's the thing, and it's like, all right, we're gonna do that a week from Friday. Like, no. It's tonight, and we're just Joe Pesci, this dude. Put him in the next room, and
yep.
Oh no!
I mean, you don't need to put a lay on him, and then you shoot him.
In the head.
You don't. I don't get this. You don't need any story. Just murder him.
No, but this is where now we're really in the weeds. The movie has completely slowed down. Where we get multiple scenes of Drew Barrymore riding horses with her uncle John, this orderly now, and it's like we're in such a lockdown facility. She can't even leave this room. But now she's believing that this orderly can take her out and have these rides.
You're going to ride on this horse. Necromancer's his name. That's weird, right?
And that is no way a red flag that my horse is named Necromancer. Oh, you want to know what Necromancer? Well, man, just it's sort of like a wizard.
A wizard of the dead.
I mean, if I was David Keith, one of the first lessons I would have given Charlie is like, if any adult ever tries to get on your good side, run away.
Exactly.
Just yep.
Good advice.
Any fucking who wants to be your friend, just be wary.
Stranger danger, this and that. Also, by the way, if we're ever captured and put in a facility, everybody's in on it except me. How about that?
Even if they're nice. Exactly. Even if they're nice to you.
Oh, wait, hold up a little bit, Charlie, there. I just realized in the afterlife, we might all turn into horses. So I'm going to bash this horse's brains in to gain its powers.
I'm going to eat its brains just to be safe.
Ah, you didn't think I would have horse powers in the afterlife, did you?
I don't know, man. We're just all, like, sitting on clouds. Could you stop being an asshole?
What do you think about my horse powers, top man?
I'm a centaur.
It started at Top Man, and he's just been like trying to like impress him ever since by gaining all these other
players. I see. Got it. Yeah.
Hey, Top Man, why won't you text me back? I get a lengthy text here about the horsepower I also just acquired.
You've met your latest nemesis, Horseman.
Hey, Top Man, hope you're well. Not trying to creep into your DMs or anything. Just killed a horse. Now I have horse powers. If you want to meet up for coffee and talk about it. Fuck, yeah. That was too strong. That came out too strong. Fuck.
You know what? Let me just send him a dick pic of my horse cock I got from my horse powers.
You know, you looked good. You were looking good on that vacation you took with it. Is that your boyfriend?
Who is this guy? You know, this is the rest of my afternoon, Charlie. I'm going to be in an Instagram hole. So why don't you go back to the stables on your own?
Looks like he looked like little fancy boy went to Vassar, did he?
Not wearing much on vacation.
Sleeping in the same bed, huh? Well, whatever. Well,
that beach looks nice. You know who likes beaches? Me.
Oh, fuck. I accidentally liked a picture from 3 years ago. Shit, 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 shit.
Gotta delete my account. I should have been on my dupe. What am I doing?
Fucked it up again. Fuck.
So, whatever. There's like another test. She lights a bunch of fucking cinder blocks on fire. That's truly something.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
And then, like, she's like, oh, next time I need more water. She's got this cool, like, they get her, like, an ice sculpture next to this cinder block wall.
Yeah, this was pretty awesome, dude. All this shit, like, melts immediately, and the water's boiling, and
all
steam's everywhere.
Practical stuff looks cool. You know what
it
I mean?
Like, it totally does. I bet you this new movie's not going to have a lick of it.
I don't think so. And Moses Gunn does something very nice. He tells you what's going to happen in the movie. He's like, now... Yes, we have control here and everything, but if she were ever to see her father again, you don't know what could happen.
Yeah.
And then you're like 20 minutes later because she saw her fucking father. It's fucking over. Thank great.
But yeah, so Martin Sheen, I guess to like this fucking dramatic setup of taking him to Maui, like they're going for a walk and he's like telling him about the helicopter's going to come get you or whatever. And of course, Andy has stopped taking his medication secretly, so he's able to mind dominate Martin Sheen at this point.
He does a little what we did in the shadows, like, why I didn't know you like to eat the worms. Because he's just like,
oh, right.
Because he's like, oh, it's weird. You're holding, he's like just holding a leaf. He's like, that snake's gonna bite you. He's like, ah, snake, a snake. It's kind of rules.
Oh, man, it's fucking pretty great. There's also, so he's telling, you know, he's like, all right, you're gonna do this and that, blah, blah, blah. And Martin Sheen tries to break free of the mental hold because he sees a security guard walking by and he just gets out like, hey, David. And then like Andy gets him in control again and makes it just look like he's waving to this guy. And you can see the security guard on the other end be like, yeah, all right, Colonel, whatever the fuck. You're just waving at me. You're a total douchebag to work for. Thanks, man. All right.
Hi.
Why is my boss waving at me like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome. So the whole thing is like, get a message to my daughter. We're going to tell her to meet me at the stables at 8 p.m. And then there's like this other, like, so he tells Martin Sheen to set this up. So I think it's Martin Sheen sends this other security guard, this guy, Mike,
yes,
to like take her and bring her down or whatever.
Well, this is the dumb thing is because like, once he gives her a nice note, this is, you know, hey, Charlie, it's me, your dad. Just an FYI, I'm going to secretly take you out of this facility. He forgot to say, P.S., if you've made any friends, don't tell them about this.
Totally. Yep, exactly. Because she immediately goes and tells George C. Scott, like, guess what, Uncle John or whatever the fuck? Like, my dad's going to get us out of here. He found a way to escape. Do you want to come with us?
Well, it's not Top Man, but it'll do.
Well, he does. I do kind of love his performance here as, like, nice Uncle John. I was like, wow, that's super swell. You're going to trick all these dummies at this facility that I also absolutely work for.
And you think your nose is not going to go into your brain. And that's just beautiful that you think that.
So they get to the fucking barn and George C. Scott is like hiding up in the rafters, like getting ready to shoot them or whatever. In comes Andy with Martin Sheen sort of in tow right here. And dude, if fucking like things go tits up here immediately, George C. Scott fucking shoots Martin Sheen right in the head.
Oh, it's awesome.
Oh, it's like, great. Yeah. Cause there's a brief mind power of like, hey, Martin Sheen, shoot at, yes. You know, Rainbird.
And also like, I don't know, Rainbird, if you're, I mean, obviously you can't really control the situation cause that's where the meat's going to be, but you have to be like, I am surrounded by hay right now. And, yeah, it's not totally. Exactly. A bunch of oily rags next to me, too.
oh, God, this is where they store the gasoline, huh?
Well, I strange. Technically, I should be fine. I killed a water guy the other month.
He's trying to, like, convince her not to fucking use the firepower, and he's like, if you do, you're going to burn up a whole lot of horses in here.
My buddy Necromancer wants to see his wife tonight.
You don't want to make this the set of a David Milch TV show, do you?
my oh my. But yeah, so he gets shot. Martin Sheen gets shot in the head. And then George C. Scott shoots David Keith right in the neck.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, it's a good one.
Mm-hmm. And this is, I kind of love David Keith instead of being like, you know what? Just survive, baby. You know what I mean? Like, you know, just, or no. Like find a way to live a normal life. It's like, burn these fuckers to the like. It's
yes,
just, it's
totally
with my dying breath. Avenge me.
You kill anyone who gets in your way. Burn it all down.
So they can't. So they can't do this again to someone else. And my God, the ensuing chaos. Well, first of all, George C. Scott gets lit up.
Oh yeah.
That's great.
She does the full Midsommar on these people, like it's a fucking insensitive boyfriend in there.
Well, because you do have some good wire work too. Because when George C. Scott gets lit up, they fucking pull the body. So it goes flying into the barn door. Ooh.
His last line, because he's like, look at me, Charlie. I need to see your eyes when I fucking take your life or your superpowers. And she just burns him up. But his last lines are, I love you, Charlie, as he's burning. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Disgusting. Pretty disgusting.
I'm hard as a rock, Charlie. Ah! I loved you.
She starts like, because he fires a gun and she blows up the bullet like mid shot. And like right. Then from then on out, she's like literally bulletproof. She's just making these bullets pop left and right from these guys' guns.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Crazy.
She blows up his bullet when he shoots it at her. And then like, yeah, it's a cool effect. And yeah, now we're doing, and this, we get these fucking fireballs, which rule, which yes. Are just like. It's like something. It's literally a ball of fire on a wire that kind of just goes from here to there.
It's like a cannonball that's on fire.
Yes.
And what's weird is like you never see it from like facing Drew Barrymore, but definitely in one shot, the way they angle the fireball coming away from the little person stunt person, mm-hmm. It looks like these things are supposed to be like emanating from her face. So she's doing, remember in Mortal Kombat 2 when Shang Tsung's power was like those flaming skulls he could shoot at you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like that's what it fucking looked like, man. Like she's just throwing like skulls out of her own face.
And she fucking lights up Moses' gun in this golf cart trying.
Oh my
very,
God.
Just slowly putt-putting away.
And that's because he's like, oh shit, the shit's hitting the fan. Let me get in the slowest conveyance possible.
And there's been one agent that's sort of, we don't get a name, I don't think, but he's been around, yeah. Get a lot of screen time. He does look like a very young, beardless Levon Helm.
Mm-hmm.
And like this dude, he gets it. She fucking launches this dude. The corpse goes, like the flaming corpse goes flying up into a tree. Holy shit.
Well, because he's the guy, like it's the first guy that shoots at Superman, you're like, oh, he didn't know. You know what I mean? But like
yep.
Every guy after that needs to be like, it don't work. He sees all these dudes firing at this little girl. And he's like, I'm the guy whose bullet's going to work. Like, no, dude, it's been established. She's too mm-hmm. hot to shoot with a bullet.
And now I didn't notice him, obviously, but one of these faceless dudes, I don't know which scene, maybe it was the earlier one, but Dick Warlock is in this movie as one of these
right.
Dudes.
Ooh, and so is George yeah. P. Wilbur as well. They're both.
Oh, weird.
Both of the shapes are just
amazing.
I mean, they were just total. They're just stuntmen. You know?
Yeah.
Well,
no,
but
sure.
I mean, that's the imprint of Carpenter, man. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? Maybe they would already hired before Carpenter got fired or something.
Yeah. They stayed on after he left. I mean. It's just it's nice to see Dick Warlock and that and the other shape.
Wilbur, yeah,
work.
Totally.
Yeah.
She blows up a fucking helicopter in midair. That's pretty awesome.
And yeah, I mean, and she's just burning up this house. They in the IMDb incorrectly notes that Heather Locklear is the only female casualty. No way. I mean, you've seen a lot of female technicians and that house is burning. You're hearing women scream as much as men. Like, she burns them all.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And for sure, when she goes back to Ma and Pa Kent, Louise Fletcher's having a heart attack when this man agrees to take care of her after all of this. She's dead. She's gone.
You'll be safe now, Charlie. And like, it's just, the fucking last shot of the movie is just Art Carney taking her into this fake New York Times office building.
It looks
like the New York Times office that would be in a mall. Like, if there was, like it's just like a really small door that says New York Times over it and ice cream.
And it's pointedly just him at the girl. Louise Fletcher.
Oh, yep.
She's either dead or she left him for good. And he's working on wife number three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am not driving from Virginia, where this movie is set, up to fucking New York City so you can bring this weird psycho girl to the newspaper.
Oh, you want to drive her? You want to drive her to New York with what, motherfucker?
Right. True.
We have not replaced the Jeep that you gave that guy.
You're going to take a stroll to New York?
And I guess since it's only like it's like a decade or less after Watergate, we suddenly feel like, the newspapers can make everything right in the world.
Yeah, totally. Just got to tell the newspaper and they'll fix everything. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, government agents cruelly set on fire by young leftist.
Yeah, exactly.
Maggie Haberman's like, well, I'm going to hold on to all these Martin Sheen stories because I'm writing a really sick book about it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
And that is the end of this fucking movie, man. Would anybody recommend it? Steve Sadak, we'll start with you.
It's a light recommend. It's 2 hours. It could really be 90 minutes. I do think the two fire freakouts, George C. Scott and Martin Sheen, are kind of worth it. You know what I mean? Like, even though, George C. Scott doing this Native American thing, it's cringy, but it's also kind of fun to watch. It's a light recommend for me. And also, by the way, the Tangerine Dream score fucking rules.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Cabin.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say, if you could find a compilation of the two fire scenes,
that's
kind of all you need. Like,
I'm
gonna say no because, like, it starts promising, but the shop stuff slows it down so dramatically and turns this movie into a creepy, weird, like Lars von Trier shit for like a little bit, and you're just like on edge with whatever George C. Scott is doing.
Yeah.
And like, I was just like, no, I don't need any of this. I prefer not to. I would love to see this 300-page thing that Carpenter was getting going.
Oh, definitely.
That sounds fantastic.
Eric Siska.
Yeah, no, I definitely see both points of view. I guess it would be maybe a light recommend for me just for the stunts and the practical effects were really cool. And I think like the first like 40-something minutes, I was actually kind of enthralled with this movie, but then it does stop dead. It does have this weirdo George C. Scott. Is he trying something with this kid or not? It derails itself. The music is awesome. So it's a light recommend, but I understand if you don't.
Yeah, it's a no for me. I'm with Chris. Look up the fucking highlight reel, the special effects. That's really kind of all there is here. And, you know, I will say I'll be the lone one here. I think it's kind of a lesser Tangerine Dream score. I love Tangerine Dream. I think they do great work. And I don't think that this is bad, but like, because usually when I hear Tangerine Dream like start up in a movie, I'm like, fuck yeah, like here we go. So I don't know if it's like because this movie is so slow and not really anything that affected. Maybe I should listen to the score on its own and see how I feel about it. But yeah, it does just fucking stop dead for like a solid 50 minutes. And that's really unfortunate. But that is going to do it for our convo on Firestarter. If you want more We Hate Movies, check out patreon.com/WeHateMovies. We got a lot going on this month. As always, of course, there's a We Love Movies episode on Michael Mann's Collateral, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We got Melrose 210, of course, and the Nexus back. Eric, who are we talking about on the Gleep Glossary this
month? Now, the Gleep Glossary, if you're new to the show and don't know what that is, this is where I read, like a little entry about one of the lesser known Star Wars characters to the guys, and we riff on it and have a good time. This month on the show, we are talking about George R. Binks. That's the father of Jar Jar Binks, and it's a wild story.
But that's not the only Star Wars content we have coming up this month, right? Am I nuts?
Oh, no, you are not nuts. You got the good brains. It is... What it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. We're doing a recap series. Obi-Pod Kenobi, we're going to call it because we're dumb. And we're going to recap the show. So there's going to be, I think, at the end of the month, there's going to be two episodes dropped. So we're going to do one episode on both of those. And we're going to continue until that show is done for now.
And that's right. So be sure to subscribe on the top tier of our Patreon.
And that'll also get you what happens at the $8 level, which is a talking cat, the commentary.
Talking catmentary, man. We are going to, on the date that we are recording this episode, we are going to also record that commentary. I've never seen this movie. I barely know what it is. I'm very excited because you all have had your fucking souls chilled watching it.
And you unlocked everything, by the way, everything we've done. Because I just want to also plug that Harry Potter commentary. A lot of people loving it, and we will continue down that street eventually. But there's an embarrassment of riches on
there. The archive, the whole stuff.
Yeah, the archive of the first like 100 episodes or so. Yeah.
And of course, on the main feed, the show will go on here next week. Steve, what are we talking about?
We are talking about A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 live from Cleveland, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh, that's right. This was our was this our first show back on the road in 2021?
I believe it was.
I guess it might have been. It was a lot of fun. A lot of John Saxon impressions, if I remember correctly.
Oh, up and down the board, man. This was a good one. It was a good room, good club, good audience. So that is going to be a lot of fun talking one of the wildest Nightmare on Elm Street sequels, The Dream Warriors. So until next week, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Take it easy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.